Okay, so we all like to think we're good people. As I said earlier, you want to say everybody should have the freedom to stay in any Airbnb. And then a formerly convicted murderer says, you know, I got out of jail 10 years ago and I'd love to book your apartment. So it's very difficult for us to manage our ethics. And it's not just when people are coming to us, but also when we're traveling. It's Wanderlust Wednesday today, and we're talking ethical travel with Glenn Barnes, chief sub-editor at News 24. Glenn released a piece last week that I found very interesting. Now, on the wake of Saudi Arabia's announcement that 49 countries, or tourists from 49 countries, including SA, by the way, can now apply for a visa through their embassies around the world, he thought it was a good time for us to revisit this discussion around how do you travel with when we're speaking about repressive regimes. And he joins me this morning. Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Hi, Rafael. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You raise a very interesting topic here. You know, we're speaking about Saudi, the country which, under Mohammed bin Salman, who, as much as he's a young leader, has been quite a firm leader, and they're presenting this sort of Saudi moving into the future kind of presentation, and yet we still see things like the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, the woman who led the movement to get women to be able to drive in Saudi Arabia remains in jail. And so it remains to be seen whether or not it's appropriate for us to travel here.
Yeah, I think I think these questions can be asked of many countries, of course. I think the issue of Saudi Arabia came up because they are now campaigning to get more tourists. I mean, this is a country that, apart from the Khashoggi instance where they murdered a journalist in an embassy in Turkey, there are all kinds of things. There's the killing of gay people for being gay. There's the restrictions on women for being women. There's the mass bombing of Yemen. That's where hundreds of thousands of innocent people have been killed. So there are many issues. I think people need to make, I suppose, their own individual decisions. But there's also could be a good time to organize a boycott. And I think boycotts need to be organized and have end goals.
The question I have for you then is, you know, how effective have they proven to be? We have seen repressive form of regime, certainly for Palestinians in Israel. And there's a very strong BDS movement there, but people continue to travel there. How effective is that in sort of shifting the narrative from parliaments and governments?
Yeah. Look, I think some of these things have limited effectiveness. I think BDS is possibly one of the most effective now, and they're more effective when it comes to pressurizing stars, you know, singers who want to go and perform there, rather than individuals who want to be tourists. That's much more difficult to kind of police, I guess, and to guilt the people into. But even if it was to that, in Saudi Arabia, those princes have many superstars come over and perform purely just for their kids' birthdays. I mean, if Beyonce or whoever goes to perform in Saudi Arabia, I think we should put pressure on them not to, in the same way as we should in other countries that are repressive, like Israel.
Yes. So now the concern that I have here is, you know, it could be our travel, it could be the stars, but I mean, if it shifts what happens at a government level, then it helps. I mean, we as South Africans are the closest to the story. Sanctions worked for us, right?
They did work, yeah.
And the world left us out, and economically, ultimately, we got squeezed. I'm not sure it's worked for Iran. I'm not sure if it'll work for Russia, but you know, I was really keen to have the conversation with you just because you mentioned earlier on that we should all make our own ethical decisions, but I suppose there's a difference between, say, South Africa has xenophobic attacks, which I think is obviously abhorrent, and the other side of, for example, if it were xenophobic attacks, are endorsed by the government.
Yes, I think that is different.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it's better for us to draw the line. So then I had to take it to my darling friends and myself. You know, I no longer travel to Tanzania on the basis of their LGBTQ issues.
Yes.
Ugandan MPs are now pressing for the death penalty for homosexual acts. And then we must take it to the big kahuna, the drone attacker of the world, the United States. I find myself feeling very much like a hypocrite because I actually really enjoy going back to New York.
I know.
As I stand here, it's easy to ignore Zanzibar, but, you know, the big guys, how do you do that?
Yes. Look, I think all of us need to acknowledge that we are all hypocrites on some level when it comes to these things, whether it's boycotting a country or whether it's boycotting a singer because of what they may have done in their past or in their present. I think if we don't like the singer, if we don't like the country, it's much easier to boycott than if we do.
Right.
And I think that's why individual boycotts are often just kind of our own little, I don't know, our own little self-righteous attempts to not feel so bad about ourselves in the world.
Right.
But when it comes to organized boycotts, I think that's when one needs to be more strategic and think in terms of an end goal and try and unify people. The anti-apartheid boycotts were very successful because it was an easy thing to agree with, I think, for most people.
Yes.
And it was organized in very kind of, you know, easy ways to monitor. So don't play at Sun City. Don't tour South Africa if you're an artist.
Right. No, that was a great deal. And, of course, don't buy their arms. So on the positive side, in terms of, let's say now we have decided we want to do something, maybe be a little bit less hypocritical. What's the best way for me to approach this? Is there a site where I can go that has some comprehensive list of countries that I can at least get some research on?
Look, I did a little bit of research myself on ethical tourism and came across, obviously, a number of viewpoints. There are many people who've argued as well that, as they did in the apartheid days, that consumer boycotts and trade boycotts actually damage the very people that you're trying to free. So there is that argument. Other people argue, well, the money goes straight into state coffers. And I guess there's a bit of both. And that's why these things are often difficult to organize. And it's why people have very, very different perspectives on visiting, say, Saudi or visiting Israel or America, for that matter. It's a difficult ethical question, which I think we all grapple with differently and probably all respond to differently depending on many things.
Indeed. But at the very least, I'm grateful to you for prompting the thought process for many of us. I think we could be a little bit more circumspect in how we make our choices on where we spend our money and where we go.
I think it's just about being, I guess, that's a word of the moment, mindful when it comes to these things.
Indeed. Thank you, Glenn Barnes, Chief Sub-Editor at News24 and columnist as well, talking to us about what we should be paying attention to with respect to ethical tourism.